There we go.
Great. Okay. Good. Well, why don't we get started? Tony, do you have a grant going right now?
No, we do not. We're hoping to get another EPA award later in the year, but that's for a Spanish language class that we teach.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
We are pretty much self-funded through industry and governmental training contracts. We're just going through some numbers. In our best years, we've had about 400 people through the program, and in the not-so-good years, it's usually around 200.
Wow. That's very impressive.
Well, and these are week-long classes typically that come through. We've been here since 1970. Teaching classes since 77, started the school in 74.
Wow.
And so it's been around a long time. The good news this week is that BP has just agreed to give us some very fantastic oil spill response equipment that's really going to stand up our program. It's we're getting a new 28-foot skimmer vessel to train on from here on out.
Oh, my gosh.
With twin motors. I mean, this is something that there is no other school that has this kind of equipment. And
I can't imagine.
You know, for all the bad things that BP had to experience in the Gulf a couple of years ago, if the end result of it is more research for scientists in the Gulf and more equipment so people can be ready for these kind of things and better engineering so that these kind of things don't happen again and planning and preparedness, you know, the ultimate outcome is, it was bound to happen sometime. We should train for the next. So.
That's right. And the fact that they're providing resources to education is wonderful. It's kind of reminiscent of the Valdez oil spill.
Very much
what
so.
What happened there was it was all very unfortunate to the ecosystem, but if you had to take, if there was any positives out of that, there was technology developed. And also many of the fines and levies went to education, environmental education in particular. And so a lot of the schools up in that area that were involved in environmental education training were recipients of the awards. And one of the things we suggest to some people that are looking, their nonprofits looking for funding, is to look at fines and awards. And, of course, those haven't even come down the pike yet, I guess, for BP yet.
Oh, no, and it may be another few years before you see a lot of that. But the research is ramping up right now. We're trying to get our hands on a new research facility that was built 15 years ago, and I think that's going to come to pass as well. It's got 9 wave tanks. And the Gulf of Mexico Research Initiative, a group of scientists are working with us to try to get that so that it's a new place that the behavior of oil in water and in the environment can be more accurately studied.
Now, where are you located? Do you have a
We're in Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi.
Oh.
We're on an island in Corpus Christi Bay.
Oh, okay. So are you affiliated with the school or kind of adjunct to the school?
We are part of the College of Science and Engineering, and through the years, some of those kind of things have changed. It initially was essentially cohabitating with the university, and now it's actually a part of the university. We have in addition to the adult education and continuing education kind of classes that we teach, we also have about a half a dozen or so academic classes where college undergrads and graduate students take some of these same courses over the period of a semester.
Excellent. Now, are you teaching things like the 1910, 120, and all of the OSHA courses, or are you saying
of course. Well, you say all of the OSHA courses. We don't teach a lot of the construction management. That's not really our spill control mandate.
Right.
We could teach those, but we don't.
Right.
We do teach Has Whopper, I mean, that's the core of the proposal that we've already submitted to EPA, you know, a few weeks ago. We teach a supervisor's course. We teach a annual refresher course. We have a GIS and GPS for pollution modeling course that we teach that's real popular. We teach the shoreline cleanup assessment technique class that our biggest customer on that one's Coast Guard. And a few other courses of that nature. We have a strategies and tactics oil spill class, and our Hazwoper classes are actually three different types now. We as a result of what OSHA came out with on Deepwater Horizon, their publication 3172, they said the employer has to decide what a 40-hour Hazwoper contains, because so many people were showing up and knew how to wear SCBAs moon suits, but didn't know a thing about how to deploy for an oil spill. So EPA said it has to be 40 hours, but the employer decides what. And we've modified our 40-hour offering now. We offer three different types of 40-hour Hazwoper. One of them is the traditional one that would be for highway responders and that sort of thing. Our second one is a 40-hour Hazwoper for military and industrial facilities. And then our third one is a 40-hour Hazwoper for oil spill response in ports and inland waterways. And each of those has a different audience. And the employers seem to, and agencies seem to like that approach. It meets what OSHA wants. It meets what the employers need.
It's excellent. In fact, OSHA, when you go to the OSHA site, they have general construction, and in their safety courses and their awareness courses, they've got the general construction, the industrial, they have marine now, and they have disaster awareness, and
yes.
They do have a marine component, and I could see where a lot of the OSHA courses might fit in some of those, whether it's fall protection or...
certainly,
protection and all those.
Confined space entry, bloodborne pathogens, all of those are modules that that we sometimes plug in depending on the audience and what their needs are. We do a lot of courses specifically for industries or groups that have asked us to come in. Like I said, we even offer courses in Spanish and mobilize to border cities when EPA's asked us to do that. Really got a lot of accolades for the program we did last summer.
Yeah, that's excellent. And really, you'd be I wish you success on your EPA endeavors, because I think it's a novel program. You know, about 10 years ago, there was a
Houston McHale, president of North Omaha Contractors Alliance.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Who is
that
again?
I'm cleaning house.
Again?
Hello?
Yes, who is this again?
Oh, this is Houston McHale, the president of North Omaha Contractors Alliance, Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, great, Houston. We're just talking about spill response, and this is a spill response school. This is an excellent program out of Texas A&M. They had a grant about 10 years ago. Unfortunately, I think they were very academic at that time. It was more part of the college, and of course EPA was dealing more with the Con Ed types of courses, and it just, they didn't really mesh at that time. But wow, the program you've got is really incredible. It sounds like a great program.
Well, now there is a difference, let me point out, between us and the TEKS program that's at Texas A&M College Station. Theirs is a completely separate program from ours.
And now, of course, this big push on spill response you're really right there, and it's worth chemical awareness. So it's really
We're in one of the biggest port facilities, well, the deepest water port facility on the eastern seaboard, and in the Gulf, and we have 17 major refineries in this area, and we have major shipping pipelines, rail, and interstate highways coming in here, and it's really, in addition to being a center of commerce and industry, particularly petrochemical industry, We're also kind of ground zero for the target of any hurricane that wants to wander into the Gulf of Mexico. So we have a almost normal operating behavior is to have a high awareness factor for hurricanes. And, you know, you guys up in Omaha have the tornadoes to worry about. We've got hurricanes that come in the big scale.
Well, you know, yeah. It's interesting. When during the spill, there were fellows from up as far as Omaha and California going down to the coast, you know, when they had such a need for people that had HAZWOPR. But as you said, a lot of them had the wrong kind of HAZWOPR training. They still needed specific training to deal with the spill response that you had.
Well, and that's where OSHA came in and came out with that publication 3172. The other thing that we really use as a foundation, I mean, in any introductory program, and I think this will help anybody else on the line as well, always we teach ICS and NIMS courses at the outset. We prefer people to come in here that have already had ICS training. But the Incident Command System approach that FEMA introduced, a lot of that's available online. A lot of the target audience for this workforce development, we are making the assumption that they don't have access or the dedication to get through that on a you know, because of computers and it being online and all. But that, we think, is a good foundation for any of these kind of courses that are workforce development or community development or emergency response. Or
can I say something? You saying now this ICS training now, exactly what is that? Because this is Houston again from Omaha, and I have roughly around 244 what we call North Omaha Contracting Alliance members, NOCA members, and it's hard for me to train 20 and 25 of them at a time, but I do got a computer lab where I could sit 20 at a computer. You know, is this something that everybody need a certain login number or how could we go about?
Yeah, this is made for you guys. Go to the FEMA website, FEMA.gov
okay.
website, and look at their educational programs. And they have ICS 100 through 800 is listed 100, 200, 700 are probably the three that you should start with. 100 and 700 are the ones we start with. And each of those is about a four-hour course. But what it is it focuses anybody that takes that on the way incident command needs to be managed or is managed by any emergency response organization in the United States now. After Katrina, you know, I think we all learned that we need better organization, command and control type structure. And even the Deepwater Horizon spill all the way down to tornadoes. When I was at an emergency response conference in Dallas about 3 weeks ago, in San Antonio about 3 weeks ago, when the tornadoes rolled through Dallas, and we all saw the images of the trucks being picked up on the into the tornado vortex on the evening news. At that almost immediately after that, the state emergency coordinator who was at that conference convened a incident command post, and they set it up exactly like you learn in ICS training.
Okay. Yeah, because so
I would recommend that for anybody that's teaching to environmental.
Now, is it a fee involved with that? So do I have to get clearance to my board, try to come up with the money to try to send like 20 students at a time through this program, this process right here? And one more other question.
If you've got a computer lab, it doesn't cost anything. It's free. FEMA does this for free. And it's got the modules are all set up where you can, there's live video if you've got high enough speed internet, or there's fantastic PowerPoints, there's instructor manuals, everything's online in PDF if you want to download stuff. It's really and I'll tell you what, any fire department or police department in your area can help you with it as well.
Okay, and another thing, so we use Meta with our 40-hour HAZWOPR, and my class just ended, one of them just ended this Sunday that just passed. So we're doing oil spill training, chloroform spills, and all that kind of spill, is that like the is that the right kind of OSHA training? I mean, HAZWOPA training that we should be having? Because we also going
that's,
into
that's something that you're going to have to judge for your community.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. No.
All
right. Yeah. Okay.
On the ICS training, it's basically any emergency.
Okay.
And I think that that's going to be something that will your community's probably already using, but you can tap into that as a resource and get people started with how command and control works in an emergency response.
Oh, okay, yeah, cool. Because we also going into, since Omaha got this $1 billion sewer separation program, we going into the underground storage tank training too, you know, because I'm hearing you jump down in a hole and it could be contaminated and no air, you can kill yourself. So we pretty much going into that training as well, because we do have a lot of, we right on the border of Iowa with all the fuel trucks and all this train fuel stuff, so we preparing for that type of leak too. So okay, good.
Well,
man,
know,
I needed to know about this FEMA.
Yeah, you brought up a good point, Houston. Every community really needs to assess the needs of that specific community and then also train for contingencies where they may leave that community. So in your case, you've got some very specific needs in underground storage tanks, and I'm sure they do also down south. And that's fair game in the EPA program. There was a time when the tank anchors were big, and there was all the states had huge budgets for pulling underground storage tanks, and that kind of died away. And we still have this issue with the underground storage tanks that is popping up again. But definitely, you know, the 40-hour is a mandatory. And, of course, as you say, in a 40-hour, the final training rests on the employer. So you can train as best you can, but in the end, the employer is going to have to tweak that to fit his specific needs of whatever his hazards are, his specific hazards in his community. But
well, and another point on that is, OSHA defines the 40-hour HAZWOPA as the start. What a lot of folks don't realize is that the employer should also document after completion of the 40-hour HAZWOPA that's required to be off-site. They should also, i.e. not on-the-job training, they also have to have 24 hours of OJT in order for an individual to be properly documented.
Okay. Hey, I think that's what we're trying to do now. We're trying to we got a couple environmental companies here in Omaha that they hiring based on the 40-hour HAZWOPA and some on the job training. So that's the program I'm trying to put together now to work with some of them. That while they're in this training program, can they get some field work as well at like hardly no cost to the employer?
Well, your employers will tell you what they need.
Okay.
They know what's required, and then of course that's your base and your core competency, because your students are going to be going to work for those companies. Then, of course, once they tell you what they need, then you give them additional things that they may not know they need, but they do need the life skills and some of the other things that round out their program, and the general chemical awareness and then a broad education on some of the other environmental issues. In terms of EPA, they have about seven areas that what they would like you to do is you give that specific training, and in your case, Houston, it's you're looking at underground storage tanks and HAZWOPA, and Tony, of course, still responds, but then you're also providing some awareness courses. The EPA roadmap is a good one. I'm going to put all of these in post-session notes for people who couldn't make the call, but with these websites where they could visit. But you'll want to also give a broad education on the other aspects like solid waste and recycling, the whole issue of e-waste, the alternative treatment technologies, green remediation and bioremediation, and of course, even wastewater treatment plant. And so some of these things, and chemical awareness with MSDS, and a lot of these things are also incorporated in the courses you're teaching anyway, but you do want to give them this broad education. Anyone who wants a good overview of the brownfields is the EPA roadmap, which we'll put a link to, is constantly revised. That's kind of the key EPA publication that describes all the brownfields programs, and it talks all about them and how they work and how that works. And, of course, the whole other aspect of it, which Tony is more involved in, is the whole OSHA aspect. While EPA they acknowledge that when you're cleaning up, one of the most important things is your own health and safety. And so a lot of these courses are OSHA courses, and it's incredible. There's probably more OSHA-certified courses than there are EPA, because you've got the not only the 40-hour, but the confined space, the lockout, tagout, the respiratory protection, sometimes the forklift driving, maybe even electrical safety and fall protection, all of those certificates. You could probably give as many certificates as you have time in your program to give in terms of OSHA. We have some of the grantees, they give each graduate a book. It's a loosely bound book, and in that book they've got every certification that graduate has, and you could page through the book with all these certifications. And, of course, some are OSHA. There are a couple of EPA, the RRMP, the lead renovation, repair, and painting, but mostly OSHA. And then some are granted by themselves. You know, a certification could be granted by anyone that provides their core competencies. But for each of you and everyone else that listens and hears about this call, it kind of demonstrates that your specific area kind of dominates the area you're going to be teaching. One of the questions, and we'll probably talk about it again next time and in the notes, this whole idea of, is there a curriculum for these job training programs? And there really isn't. There's no one that's come out, and nor will they come out with a set of books that says, here is the program, because everyone's different. And Tony's an excellent program, very oriented towards spill response and all of those things associated with hazardous materials. And, of course, you've got Houston that's going to be working in a slightly different area in the Midwest. And so what's not only the courses that you're teaching are going to be different, you may all be teaching first aid and those types of things, but even within each course, your course content's going to vary depending on your local conditions. So EPA has been very reluctant to come out with kind of standard curriculum for anyone. We've got programs. There is a program in Region 4, I think, actually, that they're not even using text. They're using iPads, and they submitted their grant. They talked to Kathleen Curry about it, and she approved it, actually, to let them use iPads. And, of course, the discussion we had with them was, well, what are you using for your content? And they're getting everything off the Internet one way or another, either in PDF form or in notes. And instead of getting any kind of printed text, they're working off these iPads, which they do have to turn back into the program. But they're finding it to be fairly effective. And but there's a lot of literature out there in PDF form. And Tony said a lot of this is free between OSHA and FEMA and EPA. You can get just about everything you need. You might need a lot of massaging of that information, but it's still there. Now, Tony, do you have an OSHA certified trainer? Then that's probably one hang up that a lot of people have, and when they start getting these OSHA courses, you've got to have someone that's OSHA certified, or you've got to find an OSHA.
Well, OSHA requires some certified trainers for the construction industry standards.
Right.
They do not require a OSHA certified instructor for HAZWOPR training.
Right.
The OSHA 1910.121 that was intended to develop that never actually got passed.
Yeah.
And as a result, there's some latitude there. Now, what we have is we have college professors who teach chemistry, have been teaching with the spill control school since the 80s. We have folks from industry that come in and teach course modules from time to time. And then I teach some. We have spill responders from oil spill response organizations like MSRC and the Corpus Christi Area Oil Spill Control Association that are industry cooperatives that come in and teach classes with us.
Excellent.
As well.
Excellent. And it's an excellent way to go. And of course, if you need, and getting back to 1910-120, and we'll put these in the notes, that if you go to the clearinghouse, the NIHS clearinghouse, there is a very extensive catalog of curriculum, including 1910-120, that are used by all of the grantees, all the NIHS grantees.
Right. There are train-the-trainer programs for each one of those as well. The thing I'd say, though, that is most of our instructors have been essentially grandfathered in. They've been teaching since the 80s, so it's we feel like we have a little bit of a leg up on that kind of thing. As far as our competency of instructors, we go well beyond what any regulation would stipulate.
So you've got an exciting program, and when you talk about leveraging your program, you're 100% leveraged right now. You're self-sustaining and levered, which is very interesting. I think
we could still benefit from a grant here and there. Okay. let me not miss a moment to mention that.
A plug-in for EPA when Joe gets notes. We'll. But your program is one that all look for. You're doing it in reverse order. Many of our programs started out with little EPA grants and then worked themselves into self-sustaining programs.
Let me mention, our program is not designed or has not been designed until we put together this proposal this year and last to serve the unemployed. We typically provide training for governmental and industry clients who pay us anywhere from a few hundred dollars to a few thousand dollars for a class.
Right.
And I think there is the broader outreach that you guys have afforded opportunity for, that EPA has afforded opportunity for in this program, is one that we aspire to, but we can't do it for free.
It's a challenging program. It is a very difficult program, and sometimes when we're ramping up on these grants before they're right in the initial stages, we ask people, you may want to consider seriously if you want to get into this. It might be your worst nightmare to get this grant because it is a difficult grant.
I'll be real honest with you. Your phone calls this year, that we didn't participate in all of them, but we did participate in, I don't know, six or eight of them anyway, did help a great deal. The debrief from last year did help a great deal in focusing on why did we not get the grant last year and to, I think, make for a better proposal this year. We had the concept down last year, but I think it was, crossing the T's, dotting the I's, and making sure that things that we just inherently thought people would understand, we spelled it out a little bit better this year. So.
Well, you keep plugging away, and the ideal programs are those that can get support from other programs and can build on existing programs, whether they're incumbent programs for profit or for supported by industry, and this is an appendage, kind of an aside that adds on to that program or helps in a synergistic effect help each other out. It's ideal because if you keep it going, and then provide this service to the community as an addition, it's really a win-win situation. And it's
Houston, and what he's saying right now, are you still on the line, Houston?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I learned a lot from the people that participate in these kind of calls like I'm doing now last year. And
you know, it wasn't quite a mentoring approach, but the offer of mentoring was there. If you can find somebody in your part of the country or ever want to call me just for some mentoring, don't hesitate. The program is great, and to stand it up, it does take a little bit of effort, but it sounds like you're reaching an audience that needs to be reached. So right.
See, this is, you know, since this is North Omaha, we are like second across the nation in unemployment. And the thing is, right here, I got, all, like I said, 244 members that are just eager to work, you know, eager to learn all of this stuff. And a lot of the money is into this chemical stuff. So,
well, you know,
Huh?
That's right. The other side of it is Omaha's got a major Corps of Engineers office right there in Omaha that has a lot of programs that are pollution control type programs and wetlands development type programs and things like that are all part and parcel of this this EPA workforce development grant. And there's some ways that if you're looking for partners in Omaha, you should see if the Corps of Engineers can be one of your partners.
Oh, yeah, yep, you're right about that. I'm going to try that next when we get off.
And, you know, the next round of grants will be popping up in November, so whatever the outcomes in the next month or two, you know, it's time to keep preparing and building these programs. So any helpful hints are appreciated. Well, Tony, if it's okay, I'll put your email in the notes.
Oh, absolutely, tony.wood@tamucc.edu. If you don't have it already, you probably do.
I have it. TMUC.
Okay.
Yeah, please send it to me. Yeah, because I need the phone number and everything.
We'll put it in the notes. I don't put your phone number in, but I did put your.
Houston, send me a note once you get the email, and I'll send you a whole V card. You can just plug it into your Outlook.
There you go.
Okay.
But there, you know, not only the Corps of Engineers, but there's a whole lot of environmental engineering firms in the Omaha area that I think would. They would benefit from being a partner in your program as much as you would benefit from it. So.
Yep, we're partnered with like Pruden Technologies. They're one of the big environmental companies here. FDN Associates. We got PE. He in the office two doors down from me. Professional Environmental. So yeah, we all housed in the same building, you know, and they are major environmental players here in the Midwest and Kansas.
Excellent.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, keep up the good work, and we keep these calls short, so hopefully we'll see you all in 2 weeks. And Tony, I really appreciate your mentoring here today, and there'll be a lot of people who appreciate these notes.
Can I ask one last quick question? What's your intel telling you on when they'll start making some short lists?
Well, if you haven't heard from them by now, you're probably going to the finals. So one thing is I would expect that the awards will probably be in July. So
okay.
It's going to be a long haul from here on. It's going to be a silent period. What they do is the contractors...
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, they go through it, and then now they distribute it, and then...
Just what you told me a minute ago is enough to take to the dean when I got to meet with him tomorrow. So that's always important.
My general feel, and this is just my feel, I think they probably got about 60 to 80... applicants, probably a little less this year than the last year. They made it a little tougher, and they strengthened the requirements. So
they're giving 10 awards still?
About 10 to 12 awards out of about 60. So it's 1 in 6.
Right.
And, you know, who knows? And what we do say is it is a repeating every year. My guess is they'll probably be calling. If they go back to the old schedule, they'll be reissuing RFP in November, so with about a February due date for the next round. So if they revert back to the old schedule, so hopefully...
Yeah, we'll remain hopeful.
Hopefully they'll do that, yeah.
Thanks for you guys putting these things on. It does help. It helped me last year, and I'm sure it'll help Houston this year.
Well, it does help all everyone who's involved. Okay. You guys take
care
now.
Take care.
All right, thank you,
thanks,
gentlemen.
Everyone. Bye.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.